One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to episode 109 of Blue Jays Happy Hour. We are coming to you with a trade deadline special. I'm Nick Ashmore, joined as always by Andrew Stoughton. I didn't forget my name there. I was going to say that when we planned to do this trade deadline special, we might have envisioned a world in which the Toronto Blue Jays had taken more steps to improve their team than they did. It was a bit of a quiet deadline, but we also haven't spoken since the Hicks deal, so we're going to kind of run through what the Blue Jays have done, what they have not done, and where that leaves them now. So, Stoughton, what's your quick overall impression on the Blue Jays and trade season?
I don't think it's as underwhelming as a lot of people think, but they did not do enough. People are going to be understandably upset. And I feel that, not a lot of other teams really made a lot of big improvements, especially the ones around them. They're all kind of in the mushy middle and nobody seemed to, to think that the prices that I guess were being asked were worth it. I mean, Ross Atkins talked about, not as many, of the, the kind of right-handed bats, for example, that they were openly talking about probably, wanting to add, just a couple of weeks ago, that they weren't as available or as readily available, which kind of, to me, means, they were asking too much and we didn't want to pay it. And since no one else was going there, we didn't feel the need to do it or something like that. Which to me isn't good enough. You only get so many kicks at the can, and I think that, as much as they feel, and maybe the Bo Bichette injury has changed things, but as much as they feel that they can get internal improvements and maybe get a guy popping from AAA or something like that, Teoscar Hernandez would have looked nice. Tommy Pham would have looked nice. Another team went and got Tommy Pham. I don't even fucking remember who. The Diamondbacks. Would have helped. They had the Jordan Luplo spot on the roster to fill. Paul DeJong, whatever. And they still have a roster that doesn't look like it has quite enough offense, and this was the opportunity to do it.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that there weren't a lot of guys out there is fair, but at the same time, you can make guys available by making good offers for them.
Uh-huh, and, exactly.
Tommy Pham's a good example because he was sort of the platonic ideal of what they needed. And again, it is hard because we don't have all the counterfactuals. We don't know. Maybe the Mets are truly disgusted by the Blue Jays farm system. Sometimes you can offer someone a reasonable value and they go elsewhere based on their own internal preferences. But at the same time, it didn't seem like it took a ton to get Tommy Pham, and Tommy Pham would have been literally what they needed. I will say that I never bought that Teoscar Hernandez was coming home. I understand the rationale. Oh, this guy, a change of scenery back to what he likes, and he may well perform like he did, very recently for the Blue Jays. He's absolutely smashed lefties for the majority of his career. He can just take the job from Varsho outright if Varsho really doesn't show anything in the last couple months. All of that makes sense. But, Does Seattle really want to trade Teoscar Hernandez back to the Blue Jays for significantly less than they traded for him a few months later? Like, it's just such a bad PR look, and you'd think there'd be enough interest in them if they're, you know, in a world where they were going to trade him. It's like, we'll take the second best offer to avoid this headache. Like, it just seems like a way to announce to the world that you don't know what you're doing is to trade, you know, a good prospect, you know, good might be overstating it, but a decent prospect and a good reliever of term for a guy, and then trade him back to the same team for a lesser package, which is probably just going to be kind of throw in type of prospects. Like, it was cool to think about. I understand why people glommed onto that idea. There was the occasional tweet about the Blue Jays looking in on him. But I just could never get myself to the point where I believed that was going to happen.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it never really felt like it was imminent or anything like that, but it just, that seemed like a thing that should have happened. It felt like the bat was just such an obvious need, and we've been talking about it since December, basically since Gurriel left, that there was, you know, maybe a little bit of a right-handed bat need there, especially they got Brandon Belt, and, you know, they focused on the left side and the Kevin Kiermaier, and it just looked like, okay, maybe they're a little bit deficient there, and it's sort of been borne out. And, you know, I know that there are some guys in the minors that maybe will be able to hit their way on and be contributors, but that's, you know, not what a team with championship aspirations should be doing, unless they really, really believe, you know. And it seems like, you know, I don't even know what side of the plate David Schneider hits from at this point. One of them, Barger's not one of them. Hits,
one of the two, I'd
one,
say.
One of them hits from the right side. I can never keep it straight.
Think Barger's the lefty, no?
Yeah, and you know, Schneider's been real good, and I, you know, I think that there was. You know, I think the fact that we haven't seen him yet, and I don't want to put too much on him, and I think obviously that they probably also, you know, one, like I say, the Vaubuchet injury, you know, there are some cloudy things about what's going on there, and how they've said, you know, no significant structural damage, you know, specifically, as opposed to no structural damage, which, you know, leaves open some possibilities. And Ross Atkins said when he met with reporters after the deadline had passed, you know, we're optimistic that he'll contribute to our team at some point again, this year, which is, you know, doesn't make me all that that optimistic, you know, that you even have to say that. Just based on how other teams reacted to the deadline, I don't know that this is necessarily true, that they like pivoted and sort of reined things in after, you know, the Bichette injury, just thinking that, okay, now we're this much farther away from being a real contender. I think they are a real contender. I think they should have done better by themselves, but, you know, it is hard to get super upset about it when you do look around and you see that just nobody was paying those prices that were, you know, for whoever was available. And maybe those guys weren't even available. Maybe it wasn't even just a Jays thing that Seattle didn't want to trade Teoscar. Maybe it was just they gave up too much. They're still sort of in the hunt, even though they're, you know, trading away their closer and sort of being sellers, but sort of are half in. And there was a lot of that sort of going on. You know, you didn't see a lot of the names we talked about that get moved. Yes, Pham did move, but, you know, we didn't see the Tim Anderson. We didn't see, we saw some White Sox move, but not all. You know, we talked a lot about Teoscar, obviously, as well. So, you know, I don't want to put too much of lipstick on a pig, though. And I think that, you know, people who are not inclined to dig down too much are just going to look at it and be like, well, that's not fucking enough. That's terrible. Joke franchise, Ross Atkins, garbage GM, fire the whole lot of them. You know, I think there's going to be a lot of that.
Yeah, and I understand that sentiment, because I think that for a long time, this deadline was presented to the fan base as, well, at minimum, there'll be a right-handed bat. You know what I mean? Like, they said, okay, you know, it's kind of difficult to actually upgrade on this rotation based on who's available. The bullpen's actually really good even before the deadline, and they did make moves there. And again, we're going to drill down a little bit on the particular moves. But I think the assumption was, you know what, some of this other stuff might be a little bit harder to do than it looks like on the surface, but you're going to be able to find one of these right-handed platoon bats, because there's a lot of those type of guys kicking around. And like I said before, you know, it doesn't have to be the guy who everyone is talking about, who, you know, is in all the rumors and all the tweets and all the, you know, we're hearing about X player. Like, they're, you know, Jake Berger was a good example today, of a guy who, you know, you might have, if you kind of really thought it out and plotted it out, you could see someone like him being available, but it's not like there were rumors swirling about him, you know, the whole time. Another guy who had kind of interested me a little bit on the down low was Rodolfo Castro, is the infielder for the Pirates, and he got traded today as well because he has been a guy who has just run these huge platoon splits his whole career, and he's been pretty much useless against right-handed pitching and has a 142 WRC plus against left-handed pitching at the big league level. Now, this is a couple hundred plate appearances, et cetera, et cetera. Like, he's not, you know, he's a shot in the dark for somebody, but taking those kind of shots in the dark, I think, is preferable to most people than doing nothing. And whether it's more advisable or not is up for debate. But when it comes to how people are going to react to the team, when you perceive to have sat on your laurels and not done much, especially with a team that has not really met expectations in 2023, that's an ugly combo for a lot of people. Like, a lot of people who are listening to this podcast, a lot of people who are Blue Jays fans are having a difficult time at this particular moment keeping the faith. And I can see why.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And you know, you look at the reaction of the players with the Hicks trade, right? And it's like, that's okay. That's you know, clearly meant something to them in the room, and they were excited about it. And to just sort of pass on the opportunity to do more, and to really, you know, I mean, I don't know how much I believe in you know, the extent to which that kind of self-belief could be a thing. And man, you'll sure hear people or see people tweet and talking about, you know, the RISP thing, and man alive, I listened to enough of that talk this afternoon for the deadline to break. And you know, you know, there is, and Ross Atkins said this after the thing, there, you know, it's not entirely luck, but a lot of that is luck. And I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but he said it's not entirely luck, but that they believe in their guys. And I think that that's, you know, there's something to that as well. But yeah, it's for those who have watched it and lived it, and maybe don't have that pulse that allows them to be big leaguers and allows them to have the even keel about every, you know, every little loss and every little frustration. Yeah, it's wearing on people. I mean, you could just see it every day, every loss, every run scored against them. Like, here we go again, and it's wild because they've been, you know, if not the best team in the American League for more than 2 months, look pretty, you know, right up there. Like literally one or two or something like that. For like, we've been mentioning that stat for a long time using probably different arbitrary endpoints, but you know, it's not a bad team. It really, really isn't. And it's just, yeah, keeping the faith with them has been difficult, and this will not help.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the quality of this team, and entering Tuesday's action through 107 games of the MLB season, this team has the second best ERA in all of baseball, 3.76. And it has the seventh best WRC plus, 108. And we know that the runs have not followed from that, in part because of the runners in scoring position issue, a little bit because of base running, which has been kind of nasty. But that's a good team, you know? Like, yeah, a team that is one of the very best run prevention teams in the entire major leagues, which is part of the promise of this team, is part of what was sold about this group, is like, this team is going to be very strong defensively and they're going to uplift the pitching staff. And that's exactly what they've done. And in previous years, they have made things harder on the pitching staff. And now they've turned over a new leaf there. They're very good at preventing runs. The bullpen has now been tweaked a little bit. You'll notice there's no Mitch White in there anymore. You've got Jordan Hicks. Like, that's a big deal. We, you know, there's a lot, there's uncertainty at the bottom of this rotation, but in terms of, you know, what Gausman, Berríos, and Bassett are doing with some level of consistency, like, that's a strong 1-2-3. Maybe you'd love to kind of distribute that talent slightly differently, so Gausman isn't as much of a hard one in sort of a playoff series, but there's a lot to like about this team. Now, the Bichette thing is really interesting because it seems like we've already been on a roller coaster with this. And to be honest, I wouldn't be shocked if by the time some people listen to this podcast, there's different thoughts about it too. Because initially, you know, seeing the injury itself, it looked, we've seen things that look like that end up pretty bad. But then, you know, today we hear, oh, it's not going to be missing tons of time. And then we hear, oh, he's, you know, he's day to day. He's not on the IL. There's no major structural damage. As you said, the language was precise in this case, which is often what they do. And then at the same time, you know, when Ross Atkins spoke to the media, he made it pretty clear that the Paul DeJong deal was kind of in direct reaction to the Bichette injury, which is a little bit odd because if Bichette's going to miss three games, you don't need to go and make a trade to sort that situation out. And I still find myself a little bit confused because the way, you know, Atkins talked about the DeJong deal and talked about there being some potential damage in the tendon, even if it's not severe, that sounds to me like, why isn't he on the IL right now?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I suspect that's coming. I mean, DeJong's gonna show up tomorrow on Wednesday. And then they'll, you know, I mean, I don't know if Ernie Clement really needs to keep his roster spot for too long here, but we'll see where that all goes. We'll see if maybe somebody does come up from Buffalo. Atkins was definitely, you know, talking with excitement about some of the stories that have happened down there, but you know, that's because he doesn't have any other fucking choice at this point, because that is what, you know, that is what he is left with. And that is, it is interesting, but you know, yeah, I'm still not sure what to think about the bow thing, and yeah, the lack of an IL stint immediately does definitely seem interesting when, like you said, when you made a trade specifically to address this guy not being here, and it's like, well, so yeah, how if you need to trade for that guy, well, yeah, why isn't he on the IL already? So that is interesting, and it does sort of terrify me still a bit. Well, I would say more so than it did when we first heard, you know, they don't think he's going to be out too long. I think he also mentioned that Bo has dealt with that knee in the past, which maybe gives them a little bit better idea of, you know, how long it's going to take, but. Yeah, they're definitely not a better team with him on the bench, or on the IL for however long that's going to last. It's going to be a bit difficult.
Yeah, and you know, they are in a position where they have a little bit of cushion on their playoff spot. They are arguably in the best playoff spot. You kind of want it, well, not the best one, but the best wild card spot, because arguably you want to go play the AL Central as opposed to being in that wild card game. But it's a difficult situation. So let's go through the transactions one at a time. We covered Cabrera on the last podcast. I will say that, but he continues to look really strong with the team, so you have to feel slightly better about that move as it goes. But it's still early days with that. DeJong is he's interesting because he's a guy who's, the thing he does best is play shortstop. Like, he's a great defensive shortstop. He's hit lefties this year, but that's not something he's consistently done throughout his career such that you can say, oh, he's part of the left-handed pitcher matchup solution. I don't think that that's necessarily fair to say, although, hell, he might be. You know, he might be a better option than some of the guys they have sometimes. with DeJong, I mean, I don't think it's fair for either of us to pretend that we know a lot about Matt Swanson going the other way. I don't think, again, I think we like to be kind of transparent about where the limits of our expertise lie. And in this case, he's a guy who has good numbers in high A, and they're moving him to double A, but he's a relief prospect. And unless a relief prospect is truly, truly special, and to be honest, like in triple A, it's pretty hard to get too worked up about who you're losing in that spot.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. To go back to DeJong, like, 13 home runs, that's as many as Springer and one more than Varsho. So that's, he's just as likely to hit one as those guys, though hopefully he won't be getting as many at bats as they will. But that does mean that he could perhaps, you know, and he has had power seasons in the past. I mean, and we're well removed from those now. But he's had some really good years. But you're right that the defense at shortstop, I think, is a thing. And I think it's more, you know, obviously the Santiago Espinal. I think everybody kind of looked at Espinal, looked at some of the depth in the minors and thought rightly that perhaps there was another shoe to drop, because, you know, it does seem like there's a lot, and it can't hurt to have it. And it didn't cost them a lot, but it is a bit weird. And it feels also like, you know, Espinal has not had the season that he did last year, and he's looked slower this year. He hasn't hit for the same kind of power when he's been on the field, and he's been kept off the field by Whit Merrifield, which, you know, rightly so, but he's, you know, just not been going the way that they need him to go. And with 2 months left, you know, DeJong does look like a better option to be a backup shortstop. Hopefully that's all that he needs to be. And that we're not seeing him, you know, out there every day for a month or 6 weeks or something stupid like that.
Yeah, I mean, there is a range of outcomes with DeJong because he has a little bit of that power. But he's also at times, you know, like in 2022, like truly one of the worst hitters in baseball. In fact, over the last 4 years, if you kind of average it up, he's been one of the worst hitters in baseball. And so you never know, a change of scenery, guys. He 90%, maybe even more, is a rental, but he has some of the, he's got club options on his contract. So in theory, you could pick him up for next year if you thought he was so impressive that he looks like someone you want on your infield for 2024. $12.5 million. Again, you'd have to be convinced that he's a starter and he'd probably be playing second base and the offensive threshold for that is higher. So, like, I don't know. I'm constructing elaborate scenario where that could conceivably happen, but realistically, it probably won't. I mean, in another fantasy scenario, you say DeJong is a truly elite defensive shortstop, which is what the numbers kind of bear out over the last three seasons in particular. So you put him at shortstop and then you finally do the move of Bo to second that everyone wants. Again, that's just not going to happen. But
no.
you could make an on-field case for that. It's like, okay, you fill an infield spot and you pay DeJong a relatively modest amount to be starting shortstop, which from a kind of total value standpoint, he could easily, you know, he could easily be worthy of a starting spot, yada, 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 yada. Again, there's more complications here than there need to be, but the reality is that the chances of any of that coming to pass is awfully slight, to say the least.
Yes, 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 yes. Which is fine, which, you know, I mean, we don't know, I don't think yet, what the amount of cash coming back the other way from St. Louis to sort of offset. But obviously this was, you know, just, you know, they weren't going to do it. And the teams found a price point that made sense for him to be moved on basically as a rental because, yeah, that stuff's not going to happen. You know, they, in a way, you know, I saw somebody was like, well, they doubled down on pitching and defense, which have been their strong suits. And that's, you know, that's probably what they should have done. Which to a point I kind of agree with, except, you know, there's a, you're allowed to get more than two players at the deadline and they could have done more. And that's, I think, where everybody else is probably going to land.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, we're looking at these transactions. I was actually asked to write trade grades today, which is always, you know, it can be an oversimplification. But, like, I didn't give any of the Blue Jays moves less than a B. Like, I think all the moves are fine. It's like every move is a B, but the whole package is like a C plus maybe.
Yeah, it's the move not made that I think is the problem. Yeah,
but let's talk a little bit about Jordan Hicks because that's interesting because that to me at the time seemed to indicate that maybe this was going to be a little bit of a different deadline than we expected because I think the initial idea was okay, well, this team is on this wild card trajectory. It'd be hard for them to do much better than that. They're sort of going to maybe keep up with the Joneses, plug some holes, but it's not going to be a huge deadline. And then they go out and they get, you know, arguably the top, well, at least the top power arm on the market in terms of just raw velocity, and a guy who's, you know, a brand name type closer. And he, you know, they don't do that. They don't generally go out and get brand name relievers. Just, you know, they've generally gone for guys with term, guys who they felt were undervalued for one reason or another. So they get that type of player. And they also get a rental who is one of the top, you know, most prominent rentals on the market, which is something they've also shied away from. So to me, and it's interesting, we'll never know to what extent the Bichette injury changed their thinking over the couple of days. And I don't envy them having to deal with that. But at the time of the Hicks move, it seemed like they were kind of having a statement of intent where the idea is, oh, this team is worth investing in. The 2023 Blue Jays in particular, not the nebulous idea of this window, but this exact team is worth trading real prospects. And the guys they traded are real prospects, not their top guys, but guys of significance for an upgrade on a unit that was already really good. Like, their bullpen was really good. I know the Romano injury, again, play a role to some extent, but I think most people expect him to be fine over the next couple of weeks, and it's a strong unit, and yet they went out and got Hicks. And so that was, I think, you know, maybe part of why people are disappointed today. That set a tone that they ultimately weren't able to follow up with on Tuesday.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely correct. No, and it wasn't necessarily even just that. I mean, you know, you always sort of talk big about it, but I was looking before we came on about at some of the quotes that Atkinson said, you know, a couple of weeks ago, and talking about, you know, the kind of starting pitching they were targeting and all, and the, you know, where they were looking to go in the the offensive market. And, you know, they were clear, lofty goals. And so, you know, by their own standards, it seems like this does feel underwhelming. And, you know, obviously he's going to say the right things, like, you know, this is I believe he said that he felt like, oh yeah, yeah, oh, we got all our goals accomplished, and maybe that's because the Bichette thing changed it. I don't know. I hope not, because, you know, that makes you think that it's worse than they're saying it is right now. But yeah, it definitely set the tone, and it definitely made me think that they were going to really, you know, do the thing that they should do, which is invest in this team and you know, take this chance that they have in front of them and really believe in what the group was here and add to it in a meaningful way. And they did. They just didn't quite get there and get it over the line.
Yeah, they did until they didn't. And
yeah,
like, yeah, as of Sunday, they were doing a great job. And yeah, and I like the Hicks trade overall. Like, as I said, I think Semmerberis is a real prospect. I think Klopfenstein's a real prospect. He'd been doing really well. Again, you know, following up on AA for the second time. But both of those guys, you could talk yourself into them being those type of back-end starters, rotation depth guys that the Blue Jays have been so bad at developing and hoarding. And they need, to be honest. Like, prior to the deadline, they talked about the idea of, oh, we're interested in starters that you can option, because we don't necessarily need a starter this second, but we could sure use some insurance, and we don't have any depth of the minor leagues. And to be honest, they're extremely lucky that, you know, they had the Manoah thing happen to them, but their top guys have been healthy all year. If this were a different year from a health perspective for the Blue Jays, it could have been a total disaster, because they haven't had that starting depth at all. And I'm not saying that moving Roberts and Klopfenstein is the wrong move, because I agree with the move, and especially only have a couple months out for Murphy's Law to take effect and all these guys to get injured. It's kind of a problem for them to solve next year in terms of finding rotation depth. But it was interesting to see them move that type of player, because that is an area of organizational need and an area where they have notably struggled to find guys and through the entire Atkins Shapiro era. And there, you know, it's hard to kind of point fingers exactly on who that is, because there's a lot of moving parts, from scouting to development to just the decisions made in terms of transactions. But it's been a notable hole for a while, and it is funny that they may have dug that hole deeper in a move that, again, I ultimately approve of.
Yeah, absolutely. But it doesn't look as good when you don't, you know, go that extra mile. And again, you know, Atkins will say that they just weren't as readily available, the kind of bats that they needed. But it is odd to me. And I know they don't want to, downgrade their defense too much by bringing in, you know, a Teoscar, for example, to use the example everybody got hung up on, that would do that and would sort of undo some of the gains that they've made there. Maybe they have calculations that they think that's, you know, the part of why we get a little too focused on the offense, and maybe it didn't make as much sense as it does when you look at, you know, this is a bad offense, or this is it's not a bad offense, but it's an offense that's not scoring enough, and you know, you really needed to augment that. And yeah, I mean, it comes down to now you've told, you know, the guys who are here really have to do it, really have to get it done, and they're capable of that. And Atkins spoke about this to the media as well, and you know, kind of putting it on Vlad and on Springer especially, because, you know, without Bo, those are the guys that it's like kind of time for them to step up. And he, of course, didn't say that in so many words. But I think that's true and that's fair, but it would have been easier for them to do so, again, with, you know, a little bit of extra help. I'm still very surprised that they didn't do that. And I share, even though I think that everybody who is madder than me is too mad.
You're the exact right amount of mad.
That's right.
You're the bar by which everyone else should be judged. Okay.
That's absolutely correct. So, you know, so keeping that in mind, yeah, you know, be a little mad. Be an appropriate amount of mad.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about this year, I mean, you know, we're on here, we're talking every single week all year long. and the tenor on this team continues to be relatively negative, and this contributes to that, what happened at the trade deadline, and it just, it could still all go so right. Like it could absolutely, you know, they could finally take that next step. They could win a playoff series. They could win two playoff series. Like anything can really happen with this team. And it's not just like, it's not pie in the sky bullshit. Like I'm not saying that they're favored to do those things or that like that's the most likely scenario from here on out is that the Blue Jays make a magical run. But there is this world that exists and it, I think the probability of this happening has held fairly steady throughout the year, to be honest. And maybe if Bo is truly kind of, you know, gone, then the calculus on this moves a little bit. But there's just been this sliver of hope that it all just comes together and clicks into place. And it's a very, it's not the stupidest hope I've ever heard. Like it can very much happen. And I think that we often talk about how baseball works compared to how other sports work and how sometimes our minds are they're just wired for things that aren't baseball. And in other sports, a lot of the time, like you just wouldn't see this. Like a team wouldn't reach all the way through the season, the vast majority of it, vast majority done, whatever, two-thirds done, and look this unlikely to do something at the highest level and then not really add at a trade deadline and then go on a magical run. Like it just wouldn't happen in basketball. Yeah. Like the chance of it happening in hockey or in the NFL are incredibly low, but it can happen in baseball in a different way. Like Matt Chapman, just as a random example, like he was the best hitter in baseball in April, essentially. If he just did that again, you know, suddenly the offense that ranks 7th in WRC plus and 14th in run scoring, you know, next thing you know, over the next 2 months, it's 3rd in WRC plus, and then it's 3rd in run scoring, and the bullpen is still rolling, and the Blue Jays are suddenly this unstoppable force. Again, none of this is the most likely thing to happen, but it's all on the table, and that's part of what makes some of this anger, like the intense level of anger, the above Stoughton level of anger, feel kind of impotent to me, is that it's not over. Like, it may feel like nothing is going to happen to this team. And sure, like whenever you start a season and you're cheering for a team and you're hoping they're going to win a title, even if they're the favorites, chances are it's not going to go the way you want it to go. But people seem to have given up on this whole endeavor in a way that just doesn't gel with how we understand the game of baseball, to be honest.
Yeah. Oh, I wholeheartedly agree. I mean, you know, and we don't need to get into my petty gripes with strawman fans, kind of, I guess. But like, and it bothers me because people don't want to be told that it's better. It could be better. They don't want to be told that, hey, you know, it was another 3 or 4 weeks last year before Bo Bichette really, like, turned his season around and ended up having completely normal numbers. Like he was, you know, at this time last year, he was like a 105 WRC plus or in that range, like, and then had a very good year by the time it was all said and done. Like if Vlad did a thing like that, which he could, which he's capable of, it's exactly what you're talking about with Chapman there could happen. And it would, you know, be not remotely out of the realm of possibility. I mean, not likely necessarily, but yeah, and it's just people don't want to hear it. They're like, no, I've seen what this team is, and that is an immutable fact. They've just this is enough baseball to know exactly what they are, and that's not accurate. And even if it were to be so certain of it and then just follow along in misery anyway, is very bizarre to me. And I don't know. They're a pretty good team. It hasn't been fun, but they are still a very talented team that doesn't need a lot to really look a lot better.
The thing that's stupid about baseball is like there's 162 games and it's still not really enough.
Totally.
Like, like they might need to play 324 games to really figure this thing out in terms of who's good and who's not good and all that jazz. And so you kind of just need to stay in the hunt. And you know, the Blue Jays are not immune to missing the playoffs, to be clear. Like they're
true. 100%.
They are still fighting for their playoff berth, and they have a little bit of a cushion, but not a ton of a cushion, and they need to play well from here on out. It is not a done deal that they're just going to arrive on the doorstep of the playoffs and kind of hope for that magical run. But, you know, you can look at the odds. I haven't looked at the odds today, but they tend to be, you know, at FanGraphs as kind of the most basic source for those projections, you know, in the sort of 70% range. Like, it is, yeah, it is wild to me that people are willing to say, okay, this team that has a very, very good chance of making the playoffs is a dud, is a loser, is not going anywhere. And I, like, I'm not out here trying to evangelize and say like this. I'm more talking about the structure of baseball even than this team in particular, because it just seems silly. The point of following a team is to extract some kind of enjoyment. And I know that a lot of people in Toronto sports have been unable to do that for a variety of reasons and a variety of sports. And sometimes heartbreak is part of it. But going into it with the assumption of heartbreak, it's like you're having, sure, there's a 95% chance you're going to get kicked in the balls by sports, but like, why are you kicking yourself in the balls first? Like, let it happen, you know? Like, maybe there's a 5% chance that it doesn't. I don't know, it just seems like an odd attitude to take.
That's poetic. That is well said. That is absolutely well said.
I mean, I don't know about well said. It might be said on brand with this podcast, but that's, if that's the best we can do, that's fine. I think I'm relatively happy to let it lie there. It is a bit of a dud of a deadline. There's reason for people to be discouraged, but I guess we're ending on a note of hope for folks. Hopefully it's, yeah, more hope, less scolding, but I don't know if we 100% landed that, but that's fine.
Well, you know, whatever happens with the rest of this Ryu game that's going on, we'll determine anything anyway, really. We'll have moved on by then.
Absolutely. So we will be with you next week, probably at our normal time of Thursday. We just want to get one out after the trade deadline. So we hope to have you guys tune in then. And anything you want to do in terms of leaving reviews and ratings and stuff, always appreciated. And we will talk to you in a world where we know what the outcome of this Ryu start is.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.